Hi, this is Father Bill W. here in Austin, Texas, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm an Episcopal priest living here in Austin, Texas. I've been in recovery, celebrated 48 years last December, so I've been at this thing for a pretty long time, and as most of you know, I got really interested in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous when I was about 20 years sober and really started digging in and came across this thing called two-way prayer that they were doing back in the very early days of AA. And it kind of got lost, never quite made it in its original form into the program. And I started practicing that, totally changed my life, changing the lives of many, many people actually all around the world. I'm hearing from folks in different countries all the time who are starting to pick this thing up and find a new energy, a new excitement to their program. So if you haven't done so already, I hope you'll check out our website called Two Way Prayer, TWO. And we're working on a whole new website that we hope to have up maybe in about a month or so, maybe even less. And I'll let you know when it's up and encourage you to go and revisit it, and love to have some feedback on that, what you think of the work we have put into that. If you want to reach me, you can drop me a line at twowayprayer@gmail.com. Love to hear from you. Love to hear how these podcasts are affecting you, if they're really helping you with your program. Love to get some information on that. So we're doing a series on a book. It's called Ego and Archetype, written by Dr. Edward Edinger. It is heavy stuff, and I know that, and I really appreciate your staying with us on this, because we're about in the middle of probably eight episodes is generally what I do. So this is number four. And this is really kind of getting into what we call depth psychology. And that's where we take the unconscious very, very seriously. And I think that's extremely important for anybody who's in 12-step recovery to become more familiar with the unconscious, because it certainly is familiar with us and can get us into all sorts of trouble if we don't pay attention to it. So if you're just starting out on this series, I'd encourage you to go back to the beginning and listen to the first episode, because these kind of build on one another. But I will do a very short review now to because it's helpful to me, and as I say, this is difficult material. So we're talking about ego and archetype. So what do we mean by that? Well, the ego, what is the ego? It's my sense of I. It's my sense of who I am. When I say Bill, this is who I think of. It's my ego. And it's very necessary to have one. If we don't have an ego, we are psychotic. You know, the unconscious is just going to bubble up and blast through, and out comes all sorts of stuff. So the ego is there to contain it, to hold it, to be in relationship with it. All right. And what are archetypes? If we kind of stay with Edinger's book title, what's an archetype? Well, it's a form or a pattern. Things that are common to humanity, and we find them in different cultures. They're patterns common to all human beings. You know, human beings have kidneys, we have livers, we have spleens, we have feet, you know, all that stuff kind of comes with the package physically. Well, what they began to learn in studying cultures and in studying psychology as well, that there are these images or figures, patterns or pockets of energy that appear in all sorts of different cultures and in religions throughout the world, and that they're common to mankind. So these are archetypes. So some examples are really the best way to kind of get a sense of what this is about. So you have the archetype of the Great Mother, you know, and we all got a mother, but there is a Great Mother, you know, and fertility rights came about as a result of this. We have this image of who the mother is, and we can relate to that. Image of the king, image of the hero, the warrior, the lover, the outlaw, the wise old man, the wise old woman. these images keep popping up in stories over and over again throughout the world. And what Jung and other depth psychologists began to see was there's real commonality to this. And they influence us in how we think and how we relate to the world. So, but one of the things that Jung focused on was he said there's kind of a chief archetype, a central archetype, and the overriding archetype. And this is the one that holds everything together. And Jung called this the self. He labeled it with a capital S, the self. And this was sort of like the God image, the other. And it's common and it appears throughout various cultures that we know that we are not the cause of our own creation. There is something, there is that other, there is that mysterious to which we relate. And this Jung is saying, is the self, that it has business with us to do. And we're going to get into that a little bit more deeply in this episode. So basically what he's saying is just as the ego is the center of the conscious mind, Jung says there's another center, the self, that is at the center of the conscious and the unconscious, and even a thing he calls the collective unconscious, the mind that joins all of us together. I got to believe in the collective unconscious. I've been married for 46 years, I guess it is now, or so, and I swear to God, my wife has a thought, and I'm thinking the same thing, that at some levels we are very, very connected, levels of which we are not even slightly aware. You know, that's why we call it the unconscious. If we were aware of it, it would not be unconscious. It would be conscious. So Jung stressed how vitally important it is that there be a link, a channel of communication between the smaller self and the greater self. And just as an aside, I really believe that is what two-way prayer is all about. I do not believe that God is sitting up in heaven, you know, whispering words in my ear when I do my two-way prayer. But I believe God exists in the deepest part of my mind, in the deepest part of myself. And through two-way prayer, through listening to that inner voice, I have found connection to that, and so have a great many people who are beginning this process. So we talked in looking at Edinger about, he starts right off with about inflation and the role that inflation plays in this relationship between the small self, we'll call it the ego self, and the greater self. That inflation happens there. And this happens when the smaller self begins taking on the powers of the greater self. And inflation is both a good and a necessary thing, but is also a dangerous thing. And this is what cultures have always been aware of, and religions have been there in large part to protect us from. See? So our stories talk about this. And of course, the great story in the Judeo-Christian world is what? The Adam and Eve story. That there were Adam and Eve, our first parents, in the Garden of Eden, and they inflate. They try to take on the God-likeness, which is reserved for God. If you eat of this tree, you will be like God. That's the temptation. And that's the human temptation, is to inflate, to puff ourselves up. And I say it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. It's a bad thing in that you get yourself kicked out of the garden. We'll get into that, because that's what happened, you know. But it's a good thing in that Adam and Eve were not really conscious up until that point. They were oblivious. They were just kind of doing the little thing, doing the running around naked, you know, like little children. They had not grown up. And that's really, I think, the deeper element of that story. It's like when you grow up, there is an inflation that is part of this process. So you look at the child who is growing up. That child starts off as a part of its mother. And it doesn't know where mother leaves off and it begins. And if consciousness is going to happen, it has to separate from that mother. It has to assert itself from mother. And these are the terrible twos that are absolutely necessary so that an ego can emerge out of this this amorphous little blend of involvement with mother. A self is born. A personality starts coming into the world. But the trick is, how do you separate from this source, from this God, from these parents, the God images were there for us? How do you do it in such a way that no lasting damage is done? There's always going to be some damage. There has to be damage. It's a painful process. But the damage shouldn't be lasting. And that's I think, what happens to us. We get ourselves stuck where we can't get out from the damage of this process. So it involves where we separate from mother, you know, but mother doesn't reject us totally. Mother understands that we have to go through this. Mother doesn't kick the hell out of us, you know, for that. She understands, but she may reprimand, she may punish, all right? So she withdraws her acceptance from us, and we feel that, all right? But then she comes back and gives it to us again. And then we go through the process of once again separating several hours later, or when we get to aisle 6, if we're in the grocery store, you know, we do it again. And it's this repetitive process of separating from, to become a self, going through a reprimand for that, which is necessary. Otherwise, if mother just lets you do whatever the heck you want to do, you'll never learn anything. You'll become a spoiled brat at 47 and still living in mother's basement. You know, you never grew up. And that, sadly, is the tale for many of us who get ourselves into addiction. That when I first started studying psychology, the psychologist who I was working with said, hey, I want to learn about addiction, the mind of an alcoholic. He said, go get yourself any good book on child psychology, and you'll start to understand. And the man was right, that this is about growing up, you know, and understanding our relationship with the unconscious is a huge part of this growing up. So Edinger describes this cycle. I'll go through it one more time, all right? That there is an inflation, an acting out, a challenge to authority wherein I play God. I assume the characteristics of God, you know, not consciously but unconsciously. And then as a result of that, I experience a rejection of sorts. And as I say, we must experience that rejection. So the greater self withdraws itself. You know, restless, irritable, and discontent next time that happens to you. See if your ego has not inflated, you know? See if you haven't separated yourself in some way from your God link, your God connection, see? It's a little red light that's going on inside of you. Something's not right, you know? So this back and forthness is what happens as we grow. And acceptance by the God image or the parent is so critical to mental health, to our own well-being. And historically, this is the role that religions have played in societies. And we're going through a time when that is changing. And we don't know exactly what the results of that are going to be. We'll check back in about 500 years and see how it all turned out. But historically, that's been the role of religions, to provide ceremonies, rituals, rites of passage, so that these evolutionary, psychologically evolutionary things could happen, but they could happen within a safe container, you see? So Edinger describes how some religious and folklore things have developed to deal with inflation, because it is just part and parcel of the human condition. And a fairly extensive list, but I think it's really helpful to go through this and to begin to understand the dynamics that are at play inside of us. So the first one he mentions is knock on wood. I'm sure you're familiar with that expression. Things are going well. They're going really, really well. You know, six times in a row, this has happened. Hey, knock on wood. It'll continue. What does that mean? You know, I know I'm getting more than I should. And I don't take credit for that. I give credit to the gods. Knock on wood, gods. Stay with me a little longer. The phrase that we use, God willing. You know, I'm going to go to such and such and do such and such, God willing. Psychologically, what is that? That's a taking my hat off, tipping my hat, bowing to the powers that be. When I got ordained to the priesthood a number of years ago, I'd sent out invitations to people to come to my ordination. And on every ordination, it always says, you know, be ordained on April 15th, God willing. They insist that be put in the invitation. Don't tempt God. You don't know what's going to happen a month, 6 weeks from now. God willing. God willing. It's an ego reducer, you see? It's a check on the inflation. Talks about primitive procedures for isolating victorious warriors when they came home from battle. You know, you go to battle, and what happens? Boy, you're inflated. You can feel pumped up. The power is there. Well, that's dangerous to the tribe, to the village. Put these guys on ice for 3 or 4 or 5 days. Cool off, fellas. Shrink that ego down. It was necessary for what you had to go do, but now you don't need it. Let it go. Let it go. It talks about the Mithric initiation rites, and really all initiation rites, but this one was kind of cool. That it, as part of the this is a Roman deal. Here's the quote, I'll just give it to you. He says, the ceremony was designed to protect against inflation. At sword's point, a crown was offered to the candidate, but the initiate was taught to push the crown aside with his hand and affirm instead, Mithra, the god, Mithra is my crown. Thereafter, he never wore a crown or a garland, not even at banquets or at military triumphs. And whenever a crown was offered him, he refused it, saying, it belongs to my god. This is exactly what initiation rites are all about, to cut us down to size, to remind us of who we are, so that we can catch a glimpse of that. When do they do it? When you're 13, 14, 15, you're really just starting to feel like hot stuff. And that's when the initiation rites of a tribe would kick in. Take the young boys in particular into the forest. The old men would do it. And they inflict some pain on them. Why? So that they could know that they're not such hot stuff. There are powers and things beyond them. Now we do gangs and we do drugs and we do stuff like that. And people are missing, we're missing the ability to have rites of passage and things that will check us in our ego inflations. Eh? In the Christian tradition, Edinger points out the seven deadly sins. And he says that they're inflations. What are they? Pride, greed, envy, lust, gluttony, avarice, sloth. Each one taking on more than we should, you know? And by being labeled sins, it's a kind of dirty word, I know that, you know, we use character defects and, you know, that kind of stuff. But they call them sins, you know, that they're inflations, that they're things that require what? Penance, confession, so that the individual is protected against them. Just a few final ones. The Sermon on the Mount, he references, the Beatitudes. And these are ego busters. That's one of the reasons the Sermon on the Mount was so popular back in the early days of AA, Emmett Fox and all of that. But the original is Matthew chapter 5. You're blessed, how? When you're poor in spirit. You're blessed, how? When you're crying. You're blessed, how? When you're a peacemaker, when you're merciful, when you're suffering for justice. You know, it's the opposite of, you know, I'm blessed when really good things happen to me. No, I'm blessed when I'm right-sized, when the ego is right-sized in relationship to God, see? But so the religions are not there any longer, not powerful enough, not healthy enough to really do the work that they were intended to do. So it's difficult to be reconciled back into the community when these inflations come along. And you know, I think you can relate to these also in the program because the steps are in large part rites of passage, rites of initiation, to get us through a process of what? Of shrinking our ego down to proper size. And, you know, in step two, recognizing that there is something beyond me. And three, surrendering my life and my will over to that something. Don't even have to know who exactly it is, but I know it ain't me. And I know I need help. And so there's the surrender. And it's not just a surrender. It is a realignment with that power. Books says, you know, that we may experience an effect, a realization of presence when we do this. I did, you know. That's why I still do it. If I'm doing a third step with someone, it's on your knees. Let's both get on our knees at 75. That ain't easy, but I'm going to do it because it puts the body into right relationship with this presence that we are moving into relationship with. Powerful, powerful stuff. 4 and 5. It's all about that. Had a wonderful experience. My guy I did the fifth step with must have been a real student of depth psychology because he was aware of acceptance. He said some things about acceptance that were so important. I didn't realize these till 25, 30 years later. He said, I'm not here to forgive you when we started our fifth step. I'm not here to forgive you, but I am here to accept you, you know, so that you can experience acceptance. Because I was cut out. I wasn't a part of. And now another human being is going to sit down with me and accept me. That's exactly what he did, you know? And at the end of it, he said something when I was done with my fifth step. He said, Bill, welcome to the human race. Welcome to the human race. You've been accepted back into the human race. His job was to help that happen. So, Edinger asked, if religion is not functioning, you know, if, as Nietzsche said, God is dead, You know, what happens? Where does this energy flow? Where does it go? He lists four possibilities. He says the first one is despair, a sense of absolute hopelessness, that meaning and purpose to my life is lost. Why? Because I don't have that vital link with that which is beyond me. You know, it's a disconnection. And it leads to despair. There's no way out. There's no way out. The second, so that's one possibility. Second possibility is projecting this God imagery and this God energy and function onto oneself. We kind of talked about this, but this is where that energy can go, so that we lose connection with the mystery of life. You know, we build a wall around us. We become the center. We separate ourselves from others, from nature. We're cut off. We're lonely, and really cut off from our human nature too. Not aware of this. But this ego has taken onto itself all of these godlike characteristics. You know, our families recognize it long before we do. But in the end, we have to come to recognize it. And the big book talks about this repeatedly, doesn't it? It says we had to quit playing God. It did not work. What's the third one? Third one, he says, is to project what should go towards a healthy religious container onto a political or a secular organization. And I'm really mindful of this because I kind of really studied Frank Buchman and what was going on between World War I and World War II. And that was a period when there were a lot of isms coming onto the scene, because religion was semi-dead. It wasn't doing the job that it had been designed to do. And so people then go searching for other things that are going to carry that energy for them. So there's communism growing, fascism growing, Nazism growing. And Buchman said, you know, there really needs to be a new kind of Christianity, not the institutional kind, but the vibrant kind, the living kind, the kind that genuinely connects people with their source. And, you know, we see this going on today. We see racial divides, we see the blue and the red, and people approaching this with religious fervor, you know? So I'm attacking Washington in the name of God, you know? I'm killing you in the name of God. It's infested our politics. It's infested us economically. I mean, we don't worship God today. We worship economics, you know? Instead of going to the temple, we go to the mall, you know? So we judge ourselves on how much wealth do we have. It's very sick. Yeah, it is very, very sick, and we are paying a price for it. All right. There's a fourth way, and what Ettinger says is that is to go within, to go and to find deep, to go deep and to find the God within, and then to relate the ego, the small self, to this greater self rightly. So Ettinger has a quote here in this part of the chapter directly from Jung. And it's almost poetic. So we're going to go through it a little bit slowly, but it's very beautiful. Jung writes this. He says, when a summit of life is reached, when the bud unfolds, and from the lesser, the greater emerges, then, as Nietzsche says, one becomes two. And the greater figure, the greater self, which one always was, but which remained invisible, appears to the lesser personality
with the force of a revelation. So when we get to that point in life where a summit is reached, where the bud unfolds, where that which was already present within us, but of which we were unaware, starts to emerge, then, and here's quoting Nietzsche, one becomes two. The one that I thought I was, the ego, now becomes two. I still have an ego, but that ego is now in relationship to something which is beyond it, and it knows it. You see? This was, and it oftentimes happens when you're at bottom and you are driven to your knees, and boom, something shifts deep inside. Well, what shifts? What shifts is this which was within us now starts to manifest itself, and it comes as a shock. It comes in the force of, in the form rather, of a revelation. And so this is the encounter with the greater self. And Jung says, this encounter is always experienced as a defeat for the ego. You see, the ego which was puffed up. And said this before, but I got to say it again. It can be puffed up in two directions. It can be puffed up thinking it's God's gift to humanity, or it can be puffed down by thinking it's nothing but slime. See, that's ego too. And either way is an inflation. It's a positive inflation or it's a negative inflation. And I know the thing that gets me in more trouble these days, it is the negative inflation, thinking myself unworthy, you know, thinking myself unlovable. These are the things that have to shift inside of us, see? So the self that was always there, you know, we go looking for God, but we're looking outside. You can't look outside. God is present inside, in us, around us. You can't be where God is not, but you can think you are, and you can create all sorts of trouble going around trying to find or to pretend you are, see? So this appearance happens. And now what? There's a chance for reconnection. And this is so important, you know? We've had the life knocked out of us. Why? So a new life can start to come into us. You know, and so there we are, just coming into recovery, and we're hurting, we're desperate, and you know, when I showed up after I had left for a while, I go out there and beat myself up some more. When I came back, they welcomed me. See, I experienced that acceptance. And are you ready this time? Oh, I was ready this time. I had made room. I had made room by going down further to the bottom, made room for God to come into my life, made room for these people to teach me how God has worked in their lives. There was room, you see? The ego was more right-sized. To me, that's the journey. It spirals. It isn't just, I got this thing back in 1990 or 85 or 2000 or 6, whenever I surrendered. No, that's a good thing that you surrendered. It's a good thing that I surrendered in 72. But all that did was begin a process whereby what? Inflations will continue. And God will feel removed. And I will go to God in prayer, and I will go to people for help. And that's all necessary. And I will experience what? Acceptance. Acceptance from outside of me. See, we talk about acceptance as if, you know, on page 440, whatever it is, you know, that acceptance is the key. Well, it is the key. But the real key is that I feel the acceptance that comes from that power greater than myself. That no matter how much wrong I've done, it's okay. You know, this is the prodigal son story. You know, he was out there screwing up royally, laying with prostitutes and God knows what else. Hey, this is my son. You know, kill the fat calf. The kid is home. That's acceptance. And that's who Jesus, in his story, says God is. You know, that's the greater self. And so to get our smaller self into right relationship with that greater self is exactly what recovery is all about. So, like I say, heavy stuff. Appreciate your staying with me in this. Hope some of it was helpful. And next episode, we're going to look at what's it like to be in that relationship in an ongoing way. So I thank you for listening. Again, hope it was helpful. God bless and keep coming back.